Hello, and welcome to the Ask Mom RN Show. Each week, Mom RN and her expert guests share practical advice for raising a happy, healthy family. Now, here's your host of the Ask Mom RN Show, Tamara Walker.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us. Today is Monday, December 7th, 2015. We're very happy to have you here with us, and we have a lot of great information to share with you and great guests. So we'll get right into it. Our first guest is going to be talking about caregiving. And we've talked about caregiving a few times over the past several weeks and the importance of caregivers taking care of themselves as well as whoever they are providing care for, whether it's an aging parent or a loved one who may be going through an illness or recovering from a surgery or an injury. There's many different roles that a caregiver may play, and it's very important if you are a caregiver that you take care of yourself as well. And many times also, it's hard to determine when somebody is in need of a caregiver, particularly when it comes to aging parents. If you are not sure if it's time to step in, there are some signs you can look for. And our first guest is Carolyn A. Brent, and she is a caregiving and aging specialist. She's an authority on caregiving and elder care, and she's the author of the acclaimed book, The Caregiver's Companion, Caring for Your Loved One Medically, Financially, and Emotionally While Caring for Yourself. She's going to talk a little bit about caregiving and taking care of yourself while you're providing care, and also what are some signs to look for that may indicate that your parent might need a caregiver and it may be time to step in and help them. So welcome Carolyn Brent to the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Mom.
Carolyn, welcome to the Ask Mom RN Show.
Thank you for having me, Tamara. I'm honored to be here.
Thank you for being with us. And I understand that we're talking about the importance of caregivers and how caregivers really need to take care of themselves as well as the person that they're responsible for. And
absolutely.
Would you tell us a little bit about what caregivers need to know? I know that you have a book, The Caregiver's Companion, Caring for Your Loved One Medically, Financially, and Emotionally While Caring for Yourself. And this is a systems book detailing how caregivers can know what to do and what they should ask when situations arise. What are some key things that caregivers need to know?
Well, Tamara, the way that I like to phrase it, it's so much deeper than just a caregiver, because that label caregiver, everyone thinks that it's, you know, it doesn't pertain to them. But every single day, Tamara, we all here in the U.S., we get up and we do something known as a routine. And we go to work, we go to school, we have babies, we have jobs. We are all caring for someone or some caregiver. So that's what I like to let people know. And one of the key components that we as a human race, as caregivers, the United States, we have to be ready for that sudden and unexpected telephone call that some of us or many of us have gotten at 3 o'clock in the morning. But think about the last time someone had that emergency phone call. Your heart is thumping and you're wondering, is my loved one going to be all right, or am I going to be all right? The bottom line is this, what everyone has to think about. We as society, we think that caregiving is just for older people and maybe when a person is in their 80s or 90s, but we have to be prepared emotionally, financially, and legally for our own caregiving, just in case, let's say you're 21 years old and unfortunately you get ran over by a bus, and that person has to go to the hospital. The first thing the hospital staff is going to ask, besides your insurance, who can make legal decisions for you? So if that person is in a life-threatening situation and there's no legal documents for that person in place, and they could be only 21 years old, then the state will step in. So I ask people, do you want a stranger from the state to make end-of-life choices for you? And I say, Tamara, I'm afraid not. Most people don't. So the caregiving piece is so much broader than what people think about. We have to take care of ourselves. We got to be a caregiver for ourselves. So what I share with folks, everybody should sit down one day, not on a holiday, because I know that there's holidays coming up, but any day other than a holiday, we could sit down on a Skype or a conferencecall.com and bring the whole family. And we have to, you know, ask our parents or our loved ones, you know, what are your end-of-life wishes? But I always share this with the person. If they want to bring that conversation up, if they feel like, I'm going to be the leader of our family, have your own end-of-life wishes in place. And it's pretty simple, Tamara. The way that I like to share with folks to bring up the subject, mom, dad, or whoever your spouse, you know, I went to attorney blah, 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 whatever that person's name is, and they put together this really wonderful package for me so that when the time comes, you know, that you're going to know my end-of-life wishes. Can I just share it with you? We got to start turning it into a show and tell, because that way we could have those you know, crucial conversations, and our parents and our loved ones are going to want to listen once we do our own homework first. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, and I think it is very important that we have those conversations when it's not in the middle of an emergency, when everybody's emotions are running high and panic takes over, grief takes over, and, you know, trying to make it all the more difficult. Whereas if someone has expressed their wishes to you and let you know what they want should something happen to them, it makes it a little bit easier to handle.
Absolutely. And not only that, Tamara, their wishes must be in legal form. If it's not in legal form, and let's say that there's another family member that, let's say, lives in another country and they decide they want a different wish for their parents, then that's where all of the fighting and the bickering and the adult sibling rivalry takes place. So once we handle our own medical, you know, documents first in place for ourselves and literally get it documented, you don't have to go through an attorney in many, many cases, but it's best if you do, you know, if a person doesn't really know how the system works. But in the book, The Caregiver's Companion, I literally point out every documentation that a person needs to have in place and where to go get the documentation if they do not go through an attorney. So they could literally do it themselves. They could get it notarized and then literally have it where it goes further than 1 year. You know, you want to get a durable power of attorney that is going to endure once a person becomes mentally incompetent. You want it to endure past that 1 year. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's very important.
Yeah, but Caroline, caregiving is... I'm sorry,
go ahead.
I was going to say, caregiving really is the easy part. And what I mean by it's easy part, once we accept that our loved ones need our help, our assistance, then I share with folks, learn all you can about the disease state. I mean, you have to turn yourself into like a self-made doctor. Learn all you can. So then, and grab that knowledge, take it to the doctor's, you know, appointments with your loved ones. Once you empower yourself with the knowledge, then it makes it easier to deal with, especially if they have something like dementia or Alzheimer's, because that disease is so tricky. One day your loved one may seem perfectly normal, and then the next day they may attack you because of something known as sundowners. And I talk about all that. Mm-hmm. So once we have that understanding, then once we, you know, accept like, okay, I gotta really face the fact that, you know, my loved one is not going to be the same, then we could empower ourselves with that knowledge. But then also the caregiver's companion, it actually will show a person how to get through the system. How do you get, you know, surgeries approved? How do you get anything approved? Because the first thing the system is going to do is tell you, well, we won't approve this and we won't approve that on your insurance plan. And I got to tell you, there's ways around everything when a person empowers themselves with the knowledge. I have 17 years in the pharmaceutical industry, and I've learned one thing. Just because an insurance company that you've paid premiums into says no, that doesn't mean no. That just means you got to dig a little bit deeper to give them the information they need so you could get either the medications approved or surgery approved or something approved. But it will get approved once we know what questions to ask and what we need to do.
And that's important to know because you've got to keep, you know, fighting and being an advocate for your loved one.
Absolutely.
Carolyn, you mentioned, you know, sometimes it is very obvious when we're going to have to step in and take care of a loved one in the case of such, you know, an accident or if someone is obviously not able to care for themselves. But sometimes it's not so obvious. You know, if you have an aging parent and maybe you're not sure if it's time to step in or not, how do you make that determination of when is the right time?
Well, once you get that little gut feeling, because that's what you're talking about, a gut feeling like you kind of know but you don't know, that's when you go into, you got to keep your eye on that parent or that loved one. Even if you live in a different state, that's when you want to get the neighbors involved, like kind of watch over mom and dad and see if everything's all right. Sometimes we may have to have a wellness check. I had to have a wellness check on my father because 1 week he did not answer his phone. That was very unusual, and I went into the I got to make sure dad's okay mode. I lived in California. He lived in Colorado. So guess what? They did a wellness check, and dad was okay, and he was upset. But I said, Dad, I love you enough to make sure you're all right. So the parents, they'll get a little upset. They'll get over it because we're doing our due diligence for the just in case. So we just got to – when we have that little gut feeling, that's when we have to be more diligent and be more mindful and keep our eyes open and get other people involved if we do not live near or in the same town, or we've got to get more involved. That's what we have to do. But follow that gut feeling. Your gut feeling will never, ever, ever steer you wrong when you follow your gut.
And Carolyn, when we do have to step in and, say, take care of an aging parent while we're raising a family ourselves, you know, the so-called sandwich generation that so many people are in these days, what are some ways that we can safeguard and take care of our children, our own family, while we're also trying to be a caregiver?
Well, that's when, Tamara, you got to turn caregiving into a family affair. Before anyone moves a loved one into their home, the family needs to sit down and try to figure out, is this going to be a good fit? For an example, some people don't even like their in-laws. They don't like their in-laws, and if they, let's say the in-law has dementia, a lot of oftentimes that person that has dementia, they may become mean or even worse than before. So we've got to really, really, you put your own family first, but the family needs to sit down and have a family crucial conversation to see if it's going to be a good fit. And it must be a good fit not only for the emotional part, but also a safety part, too. Let's say, Tamara, that you have a 2,800-square-foot home and everything is upstairs and you don't have, you know, a room, you know, a bedroom on the first floor or someone is sleeping in that bedroom on the first floor. You got to ask yourself, is that person willing to give up their life the way that they know it to be, or is the stairs going to have a problem for, you know, your aging or your loved one going up and down the stairs? So that's when, once again, your own core nucleus family got to sit down and ask, is this going to be a good fit for us? If it's not a good fit, then you have to ask alternatives. Well, maybe have a caregiver go to your parents' home, or maybe perhaps the person may have to go all the time to check. But your own family comes first. But then the family needs to say, can we make this a family affair and get the children involved? When some kids will read to their grandparents or folding clothes or little things that they can enjoy so they don't feel like they're a burden on their family. So that's what I suggest. And then if you have to go into a private assistant living, if your loved one has either the insurance plan that will put them in a private assistant living or if they have the income, then that would be another choice. But often, here in the U.S., 55% of the American population, they do not have long-term care in place in regards to where they're going to go afterwards, or they may not even have the funding. So there's just a lot of variables. That's why the sooner a person gets all of their legal documents and wishes in order and have the family conversation about the what-if scenario before it happens, then everybody could get on board. And because I'm an advocate for family legacy and families working together, because the system is really, really broken. That is why I'm an advocate trying to get laws changed to safeguard a lot of our wishes. But families got to get together, and we've got to do it the way my grandparents used to do it. And that was grandma and grandpa would live at home, and everybody take care of grandma and grandpa.
Yes. And Carolyn, you have in your book the Caregiver's Cheat Sheet. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and what is on that?
Yeah, the cheat sheet, often people that are in a panic situation, Tamara, let's say they get that phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning and they're rushing to the hospital to see their loved one or to check on their loved one. If they grab, or when they grab, the Caregiver Companion book, the cheat sheet will share with the person that's reading it, these are the questions that you need to ask when you're in an emergency situation. And it literally will walk you through, ask the doctor A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I mean, everything's on there. Or let's say it's a non-emergency situation, but you don't feel like reading the book. Everything is on that cheat sheet. So it literally will tell you, Tamara, go to chapter 7, sentence number 3, that's going to tell you about finances. I mean, it's a cheat sheet. So I kept that in mind because I was always in some type of situation with my dad where I always wished I had something that I could look at and could tell me certain things. But there was nothing on the market during that time like that. That is why I created the Caregiver Companion and put the cheat sheet in there, because it's the book is the first of its kind.
Well, it sounds like an incredibly helpful tool and resource.
It Carolyn. Is, Tamara. It's in all the libraries, too. So even if a person cannot, if just don't want to buy the book, they could go to the library, check it out, and, you know, keep it for a while. The only problem with that is they won't be able to write, and because there's a lot of, you know, Q&As in there and different. It's like a workbook to really, really help a person. But they could check it out at the library.
That's great. Carolyn, you say there's 10 telltale signs that indicate an aging parent can no longer live alone. Could you share maybe just a few of those with us?
Yes. My number one thing that people got to realize, when your parents have once been immaculate, their home is immaculate, their bills are always paid, and everything's like perfect, then all of a sudden, a month goes by and you visit your parents, or maybe a year has gone by and you've flown back to wherever they live, and you notice that the house is dirty. It looks like it hasn't been clean. It's been in a disarray. Or you walk into the kitchen and it's smelly because there's rotten food in the refrigerator. That's when you know something's wrong with mom and dad. They may act normal. They may somewhat look normal, but that is a telltale sign something's wrong, especially when you want to clean out the refrigerator and your parent or your loved one gets angry that you're throwing away their good, expensive food. That is a telltale sign. Or when your loved one doesn't bathe, and people with dementia and the early signs of dementia, the first thing, Tamara, they become afraid of the bathtub, getting in the water, because it's like walking into a deep hole. So guess what? They're going to wear the same clothes every day. They have this odor on them because they haven't bathed possibly in 2 weeks or a month. They don't want to bathe. That's like a no-no. Those are some telltale signs, and it's very, very obvious, because you'll notice it's not like the person that you once knew. And that is telling you, you got to look a little bit deeper. Because especially with folks that have the early stages of dementia, they appear to be perfectly normal as far as conversation. But then you'll be able to look around and see something's not right. Because dementia is this is the most trickiest disease out there. One day they may seem normal, and the next day they may, you know, use profane language and want to, you know, do something horrible to you. that's the sundowners that I talk about in my book, so that people aren't, you know, like thinking that their parents or their loved one is super crazy. That's just part of the disease that happens with sundowners. And I go into great detail with that.
Carolyn, this is such important information. Can you share with us where we can learn more, where we can find your book? And then also, I know that you have a Blog Talk Radio show, and if you would share with everyone how they can find your show, we'd love to know that as well.
Thank you. Well, first of all, if you Google the name Carolyn A. Brett, all the work that I do, it's national and international. And I have a website, Tamara, that I created for not only the caregivers but for families that have so much information. And the information is anything that they think they want or things that they don't even know that they need are there, including how to get free medication, who to contact to when you're trying to look for assisted living for your parents. It's a wealth of information. In regards to my books, they're in every major outlet literally in the United States, every major outlet, including the libraries. And as far as my Blog Talk show, every show and everything that I do is on caregiverstory.com. And I made things so convenient. The only thing you have to do is go to where it says media, and it shows my radio shows, and they could just open that up. It'll take them to every show I've ever done, the archives, and it could also take them to my Blog Talk show. And all my television, everything is on there, everything. So I've made it really, really so convenient for the caregivers and their families. They don't even have to go any place except for my website, and then my website will take them any place else they need to go.
Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for being with us today and for sharing all this important information with us.
Tamara, I want to thank you for allowing me, and just one last powerful message. We just want to keep our loved ones safe. It's all about keeping them safe, loving them, and being with them and creating family legacy. And Tamara, thank you for having me today on your show. I appreciate it.
I want to thank Carolyn for being with us and for providing that great information. Narcotic addiction is not just a problem on the streets. Research indicates that every year, 70 million patients, that's a lot, will receive narcotics following surgery at a hospital or clinic. Unfortunately, 1 in 15 of these people will become long-term users. And according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, prescription painkiller abuse is a growing epidemic, which we've talked about many times on the show. And especially, this is becoming more common among women. A new national survey sheds light on what may be a contributing factor. Joining us to talk about the new Voice Your Choice campaign and what we can do about prescription painkiller drug abuse is noted surgeon Dr. Christy Funk.
Hi, Tamara.
Hi, Dr. Hello. Funk. Welcome to the Ask Mom RN show.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Funk, would you please tell us why so many more people are becoming addicted to prescription painkillers? This has become such a huge problem in our country.
It has become a huge problem. Over 70 million people this year will undergo surgery and be given a narcotic prescription. 1 in 15 will become addicted. So healthywomen.org conducted an online survey to try to figure out the root of the addiction problem. And what they discovered is pretty revealing. So over 700 women answered questions about their attitudes toward narcotics. These women had all undergone surgery in the last 10 years. And 90% of them said, yes, I know that narcotics can lead to addiction and I'd like to avoid them. Yet 80% of them still took the meds. And unanimously, everybody said, I'd like to be a part of the conversation about my postoperative pain management. But over 70% never had that conversation. And that's the key, I think. Part of the addiction is fueled by the fact that non-narcotic options were never explored. The patients, the women, are just given narcotics as a prescription. They're in pain, so they take them, and a certain percent will become addicted.
So how do we talk to a surgeon if we are facing surgery? How do we talk with them about the options for painkillers and make sure that we aren't getting narcotics if we choose not to have them?
Well, first of all, feel empowered. Your surgeon is not going to feel threatened or offended by your asking some basic questions about the postoperative pain management plan. You can go to healthywomen.org, and under the Pain Center, there are some tips and scripts and questions that you can ask. But the basic obvious ones, in my opinion, would be to ask your surgeon, how much pain do you think I'll be in? How long do you think it will last? And what's the plan to control the pain? And if you, as the patient, really want to avoid narcotics, then express that concern, and you can explore non-narcotic options. For example, I use this multimodal therapy, whereby using a number of medications immediately before, during, and immediately after surgery, we basically control pain so well that the need for narcotic is almost eliminated.
Why do you think people are intimidated about talking with their surgeons about their pain options?
To a certain extent, I think people are intimidated because the surgeon probably has done this operation thousands of times before, and he or she has the plan in place on how to control your pain, so you feel intimidated by challenging or questioning that. But you should know that surgeons and doctors understand that this is a two-way street. You are the patient. We took an oath that is to always work in your best interest, and in your best interest is a conversation.
And is prescription painkiller addiction, is this primarily affecting women or men as well, or more women than men? What does the research show?
The research shows that 1 in 15 people taking narcotics for post-op pain will become addicted. That's men and women alike. The trend right now is that more women are becoming addicted, but it's not more women than men. They just have a faster rate of addiction right now.
And where can we learn more about prescription painkiller abuse and options for pain control and how to talk with a surgeon if we are facing surgery?
Just go to healthywomen.org and read about the Voice Your Choice campaign.
Well, thank you very much for sharing this information with us today.
Thanks, Tamara.
Switching gears a little bit, we're going to talk about how to protect yourself from fraud when you're shopping this holiday season. Now, have you received new credit cards in the mail, the ones with the new chip? Well, these are designed to make our shopping a little bit more secure. We have Stephanie Erickson, who is the Vice President of Risk Products at Visa, and she's going to be telling us a little bit about these new chip cards and the new chip technology and how it works, how it's to protect us and keep us, our holiday shopping offline and online, more secure, and including when we make mobile payments, how we can protect ourselves from consumer fraud. So let's welcome Stephanie to the show.
Hi, Tamara.
Hi, Stephanie. Welcome to the Ask Mom RN show.
Hi, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being with us. Stephanie, would you tell us a little bit about the new chip cards and how they work and what is it about them that makes them more secure than traditional credit cards that we're used to using with the magnetic stripe?
Yeah, so the key thing that people need to know about a chip card is that more and more often as the merchant terminals become upgraded to be able to read the chip that's getting sent out to people on their cards, that chip is being used to generate a unique one-time code that changes with each transaction. It's actually based on some data in your transaction, like your purchase amount, for example. And so it's a mathematical calculation that that computer chip on your card is doing. And when that code is sent into the system, we can validate it to authenticate and know that that transaction is not fraudulent. And it's actually specifically helping us protect against counterfeit fraud, which is about two-thirds of the fraud that we see in stores today.
And is there some kind of deadline that retailers have to have the new chip card readers by, or is it just up to each retailer on whether they have those?
Yeah, from a merchant perspective, the key date was October 1st of this year, which is when if a merchant doesn't yet have a chip terminal, they can still accept your card. They can still take the magstripe on the back of your magstripe card or your chip card that still has a magstripe on the back. But if there's any fraud on that transaction, the merchant may be liable for that fraud, whereas previously it was the banks who was liable for that fraud. So consumers are always protected with zero fraud liability protection. And for a merchant to protect themselves, the key thing that a merchant needs to know is to upgrade to a chip-capable terminal, and then they'll be protected against any fraud as well.
And Stephanie, we're seeing more and more mobile payments, and people are paying with their phones, like Apple Pay and things of that nature. Can you talk a little bit about that and how we can protect ourselves if we're paying through mobile pay?
Yeah, well, the great thing for people to know about paying with their phone, like Apple Pay and Samsung Pay and Android Pay, for example, is that not only are those different phone wallets using enhanced security like tokenization, which is where when your account number is put into those mobile wallets, it's actually not your real account number that's being stored. It's a digital token, which is a digital representation of your account number. So as you're shopping with that phone, using it in the store to do an Apple Pay purchase at more and more merchant locations that can accept Apple Pay right in the checkout lane, or even when you're out shopping around and buying things on your phone through your browser or through an in-app purchase, whenever you are using those mobile wallets, that transaction account information is different from the account number on your card. So if a criminal steals that number, they can't use it to do an internet transaction or e-commerce fraud or do any counterfeit fraud. It's actually a very secure and very convenient way to pay. And Apple Pay also does added security like your fingerprint or your thumbprint for Touch ID to make sure that it's really you using that wallet and using that technology. So it's a much more secure way to pay and also very convenient for people as well.
Yes. Well, Stephanie, more and more people are shopping online, and many people are concerned about the security of using their credit cards online. What are some ways that we can protect ourselves from fraud and protect the security of our information when we're shopping online?
Yeah, well, the key thing for people to know about shopping online is there's much more technology available to secure those transactions as well. Visa Checkout is just one example where a consumer can sign up for Visa Checkout. You can enter in your favorite credit cards and debit cards and your shipping address and billing address. And then whenever you use Visa Checkout to check out at a merchant location, all you have to do is enter your username and your password. You don't have to type in your account number and share your account information with that merchant to do the transaction. So it's a lot more convenient in automatically filling in those form fields for you, and also a lot more secure. And there's many similar applications available to do that type of an interaction. Also, consumers should be making sure that they're not sharing their account information with any merchant that they don't recognize, or that they're being very careful to guard themselves against any phishing attacks or spoofing attacks where somebody might send them an email and ask them to send them their account number to verify their account number. Visa would never contact a consumer to ask them for their account information by email or by phone. So just making sure they're protecting themselves and keeping all of their internet security software up to date on their computers. And they can also sign up for things like transaction alerts, where you can sign up and have a text message or an email message sent to you every time your account number is used so that you can monitor those transactions and make sure they're ones that you're familiar with.
Stephanie, when we are shopping in store or if we're using our card, you know, at a restaurant or somewhere out and about, how can we protect ourselves and protect our credit card information and keep it secure?
Yeah, well, certainly using chip cards and mobile phones is very secure when you're out and about and shopping. And then also signing up for those alerts, as I mentioned, is something people can use to monitor their activity. They can also sign up for something like mobile location confirmation in their mobile app on their phone through their banking app, their mobile banking app. More and more financial institutions are offering that, where you can sign up to have your mobile phone location associated with your account. So if you're doing a transaction in New York and your phone is also identified as being in New York, there's a much higher confidence that that's genuinely you doing that transaction when your phone's in the same general vicinity as you. So there's a lot of different security technologies you can sign up for to help improve the security of your account and help your bank make sure those transactions are really yours. And if people would like any more information about the different security technology that's available, there's a lot of great information as well on Visa.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for providing this information for us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
And the holidays, of course, are also a season of giving and supporting our favorite charities. And the holiday season is a great time to give back to those in need or people who may not be as fortunate as you are. So while you're trying to support your favorite charity, if you are giving money online, how do you make sure that your dollars are 100% going to the charity? And also, how would you like to get a 1% match to all of your donations over $10 during the month of December? Well, PayPal is offering just that. We have Pablo Rodriguez, who is the Director of Global Consumer Initiatives for PayPal, and he's going to tell us about this PayPal initiative to match 1% to all donations over $10 over the month of December, and also a little bit about how PayPal is giving back and helping our charities that we love. Now, I talked with Pablo last week on Giving Tuesday, and even though Giving Tuesday is past, the whole holiday season really should be the time when we are thinking of giving. So let's welcome Pablo to the show.
Hey, Tamara.
Hi, Pablo. Welcome to the Ask Mom RN show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Pablo, the holidays are a season of giving, and especially kicking off with Giving Tuesday, December 1st. There's many ways that people can give back this year, and I understand that PayPal is doing a lot to help with charitable donations and to help people give back. Can you tell us a little bit about what PayPal is doing?
Absolutely. Well, for us at PayPal, I mean, in terms of the ability to power giving, not just during the holiday season, but year-round, is something we're very proud of. I mean, last year in 2014, we helped charities raise over $5.7 billion globally through the Pay with PayPal or Donate with PayPal button. And so as we're now entering the holiday season and now on Giving Tuesday, a concept of reminding consumers that we're entering the most important season to give back, especially after we've gone through Black Friday and Cyber Monday, the whole premise of Giving Tuesday is to do just that, to take a moment to pause and to remember the neediest. And so effectively this partnership, since its inception back in 2012, on the whole concept of Giving Tuesday, we're really proud to be one of the founding members of Giving Tuesday since it first began back in 2012.
And what are some ways that PayPal will be helping charities throughout this holiday season?
So the most important one for your listeners is for folks to go to paypal.com/givecheer. And on that website, they'll be able to see the hundreds of thousands of nonprofits that they can donate to via PayPal. And then also, as in years past, we're very proud of PayPal to offer a 1% match for any donation made beginning December 1st through December 31st via PayPal. So if a consumer donates to their favorite nonprofit using PayPal, we will match that with a 1% match this holiday season.
And how does that work? Is that for any charity that someone chooses to donate to through PayPal?
It's any charity that accepts PayPal. So if it's a donation that's facilitated through the PayPal wallet, we will match that donation by 1%.
That's wonderful. A lot of people are always concerned about cybersecurity and keeping their credit card information safe and their bank information safe. Are there any safety concerns people need to be aware of when using PayPal to donate to charity?
Right. Well, consumers need to know that not just in the month of December, but year-round, security and protection for our consumers and our merchants is our number one priority at PayPal. And the same rigor that we apply daily to that commitment, they can expect this month as they donate via PayPal to their favorite nonprofits. We go through a very rigorous process in vetting nonprofits before they can enter our platform and accept money via PayPal, so consumers can rest at ease that their donations, similar to their purchases, are done in an easy, safe, secure way.
And another concern people often have when donating to a charity is they want to ensure that 100% of their contribution is actually going to be given to the charity. Is that the case with giving through PayPal?
It is throughout the month of December as we garner donations and our 1% match. It's not just 100%, but 101% match as PayPal, as we as a corporation donate to that nonprofit as well.
And many people are using mobile apps now to not only do their shopping, but to also donate to charities. Can you tell us a little bit about how we can use PayPal's mobile app to donate to our favorite charities?
Well, Tamara, I mean, I think one of the things as we're coming off of Black Friday and Cyber Monday and Giving Tuesday and some of the news reports of in-store sales and shopping versus consumer shopping earlier and via their mobile devices and online, we're certainly continuing to see an uptick in that consumer trend. I can tell you that 13% of donations were done on mobile devices for us at PayPal, and that's a 65% increase year over year. And so as consumers are not just looking to shop in a safe, easy, and secure way when they want and where they want, which mobile allows, they're also looking for that same ease as they donate. And so instead of having to write a check or donate cash, mobile allows that ease and secured format for consumers to donate easily using PayPal.
And is there anything else that you would like us to know about what PayPal is doing this holiday season to help charities?
I would just say happy Giving Tuesday to your listeners and encourage everyone to give back using paypal.com/givecheer.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Tamara. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
And while we're talking about giving back, this is also a great time for us to think about our veterans and our military families and how we can help them. A new campaign is underway to help veterans and their families this holiday season. And joining us to explain about this campaign is Ellie Kay. She's the author of 14 books, including Heroes at Home and Help and Hope for America's Military Families. Ellie's husband is in the military, as well as three of her children. And Ellie's going to tell us all about this new Sing to Salute Military Families campaign.
Hi, Tamara. This is Ellie Kay.
Hi, Ellie, and welcome to the Ask Mom RN show.
Well, thank you. Great to be with you today.
Thank you for being with us. And would you tell us about this new campaign, the Holiday Sing to Salute Military Families campaign?
Well, it's really exciting. Walmart's Holiday Sing to Salute Military Families is a way that you can show support for our military families by lending your own voice. In fact, you can learn more about the campaign and review rules and even see featured videos by going to walmart.com/singtosalute. And I'm really excited this morning because to launch this campaign, Walmart is donating $500,000 to the Fisher House Foundation. In fact, I'm at a Fisher House right now coming to you. And Fisher House, of course, is a place that provides a home away from home for veteran and military families while their loved ones are staying in a military or veteran hospital. This will help support home improvements and holiday festivities for over 60 Fisher Houses across the United States.
That sounds wonderful. If people want to get involved and participate in this campaign, what do they need to do? What's involved?
Well, it is so much fun. It's a very easy and fun way to get involved. It's basically between now and December 22nd, you can create your own video featuring a snippet from a classic holiday song. Now, our family chose to sing the chorus of Jingle Bells. And then you post that video to a public Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube account using the hashtag SingToSalute. When you post to YouTube, it's important that you use the hashtag in both the description as well as the title. And then post it and tag somebody else so they can participate as well and more people can get in on the fun. For every hashtag of SingToSalute, Walmart will donate an additional $100 up to $1 million. Now, this money will provide lodging for a full year for military families across the United States in the Fisher Houses. And it's a very fun, easy way to do it, and all you have to do is lend your voice.
And this sounds like a fun way and also a great way to support military families. Can you speak to a little bit about what kinds of challenges military families tend to have to face at this time of year during the holidays?
Well, traditionally the holidays are when most Americans are celebrating the joys of the season with their family, but that's not always the case with military families. In fact, some military families are separated from their loved ones due to deployments or other factors. In other cases, maybe a military member has just returned from a long deployment. In our family, my Marine son just came back from a deployment that was 6 months long. There can be some reintegration issues that occur as a result of that. And then one other area where there are challenges is if they're making the transition from military to civilian. In all of these cases, it can take its toll, both financially and emotionally, especially during the holidays. That's why it's so important as a military wife and mom to three active duty sons to hear from America, to hear that America is behind us, that they want to help support us. And by participating in the Sing to Salute, that's one way when we can literally hear your voice and be able to know that you really do care about us as a military family.
And it's so important to give support to our troops and to their families. Ellie, this is the season of giving. The holiday seasons are a time when we focus on giving to each other. And why is it so important that we give back to our troops, to our men and women who are in uniform?
It is one of those things where when you are serving in the military, you're part of the 1% that protect the rights and freedoms of the other 99% of us. And we don't always hear from the public when it comes to showing that support. And it is important, whether you're thanking someone in the airport or whether you're singing a little bit of your favorite holiday song and posting to Sing to Salute, no matter what you're doing, you are letting these military families know that you're behind us, that you care about us, and this is a wonderful time of the year to be able to express that gratitude.
Now, Ellie, you mentioned the Fisher House Foundation being the beneficiary of this campaign. Why did you choose to work with the Fisher House Foundation?
Well, Fisher House is celebrating its 25th anniversary of helping veteran and military families. And so it's a perfect time of the year to partner with them. I'm at the Fisher House and I see what's going on and I see the tremendous impact that they are making as they provide a home away from home for veteran and military families who have a loved one at a nearby hospital. And the cool thing about the Fisher House is that they're not only providing help during the holiday season, but they're doing it year-round as well.
Ellie, this sounds, again, like a wonderful campaign. If we want to get involved in it or if we want to learn more, where do we need to go?
You can go to walmart.com/sing2salute. And in doing that, you can create your own video, share it with your friends, and let's get everybody involved.
Well, thank you so much again for being with us and for sharing this important information. And happy holidays to you and your family.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Are you throwing a holiday party this year? Well, Chef Jamie Gwynn has some great tips on how to make our holiday party this year the best ever.
Hi, Tamara. It's Jamie.
Hi, Jamie. Welcome to the Ask Mom RN show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm grateful. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays. Jamie, a lot of us are going to be throwing holiday parties this year, so what can we do to liven up our holiday party and make it a lot of fun for our guests?
Well, I will say there is something to be said for wowing at a holiday party, and so I've teamed up with some terrific companies so that I can bring you my best ideas for a hopefully reduced stress holiday season, and one where you throw the ultimate party that everybody is still talking about for days and weeks and months to come. So, Tamara, I'll start off with this idea. I think when everyone arrives at your house for a party, in fact, I know this from my chef's perspective, they're always hungry. And you can really impress by creating and setting up a charcuterie or cheese board in advance. I think it definitely gives the host a little bit of ease knowing that it's done in advance. It looks super beautiful. It could act as a centerpiece on your dining room table or on the buffet. And my cheese board always includes fresh fruit, like bunches of grapes and dried fruit. And then I like nuts and crackers and different salamis and prosciutto. And then I always have a wedge or two of Jarlsberg cheese. I grew up with Jarlsberg. It's the mild, mellow, nutty flavor that everybody loves. And they make a smoked Jarlsberg as well, which is delicious. It's still made in the original Norwegian recipe, and it's a great go-to. You know, it's that great wedge. You've got all the snacks surrounding it. Everybody's milling around and talking, and if you have any leftover Jarlsberg, by the way, you mix it into your mashed potatoes. It is so good.
That sounds absolutely delicious.
Yeah, it really is. Another great tip that I'd love to share is when it comes to making the party easier for the host, the best thing you could do is set up a self-serve bar, because there's nothing like the cumbersome act of shaking up individual cocktails. So I set out a bar where everybody can serve themselves, especially if you do like a pitcher cocktail or a cocktail that you can put in a dispenser and then they pour it themselves. It's so easy. And I make a dessert cocktail because I have a terrible sweet tooth, or maybe a wonderful one at that. And I make mine with Pinnacle Vodka. And Pinnacle Vodka is the premium vodka with the price that you didn't expect. But they have 40 different varieties of really fun, festive flavors. And especially at the holidays, they make a pecan pie vodka and a pumpkin pie vodka. And it's just, it's really fun, and it gets everybody talking. And then, of course, at all of my parties, I always have a party favor, because I like that tomorrow you're still talking about me. And since we're celebrating the 100-year anniversary of the Quaker Oats canister, I made the Vanishing Oatmeal Raisin Cookies on the underside of the lid of the canister, and I'm packing a few in a little bag and tying it with a ribbon, and I'll give everyone a bag to take home for, like, late-night snack or the next morning with coffee, and that way you still remember me. And I think there's a really wonderful sense of, you know, being the consummate host in doing so. And by the way, the Quaker Oats canister, the one we know today, is 100 years old, but it's still the one like my mom bakes with and my grandmother baked with. It's the go-to. And then last but not least, Tamara, unfortunately, we always have to clean it up. But I am grateful this season for Ziploc brand. Their limited edition holiday collection containers just released, and I love them. Like, there's this gold color that I think is fabulous. I've reorganized my entire house. They have green and red as well. The Ziploc containers are for leftovers, for crafts, for football snacks. Then the Ziploc Easy Seal bags are my go-to for the refrigerator. And everything you need to send everybody home with, you know, great tasting leftovers is all in a Ziploc brand Ziploc. And then last but not least, I have a great idea for repurposing, and I think it will decorate your Thanksgiving table in true style. You take your leftover pumpkins, don't throw them away just yet, from Halloween, and you spray them. All you need is a can of metallic gold spray paint, and you'll essentially have gilded all your pumpkins. And they are so beautiful, you can line them up at the center of the table for a wonderful centerpiece that's totally repurposed. And I've given you everything you need, instructions, and all the information on everything you heard about, you know, the cheese board and more, at chefjamie.com.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for all these great ideas, and happy holidays to you.
Oh, and happy holidays to you, Tamara. Thank you for having me.
Have you started decorating yet? I've only decorated my office, but I haven't even started on the house yet for the holidays. So if you need some ideas or some tips for decorating this holiday season, we have the hosts of HGTV's Open Concept, Ashley Turner and Whitney Gaynor, and they're here with some fun ideas for our decorating for the holiday season.
Hi, Tamara.
Hi, Tamara.
Hi, Ashley. Hi, Whitney. Welcome to the Ask Mom RN Show. When we're decorating for the holidays this year, what are some ways that we can make a warm, welcoming feeling for our family and for our friends that visit?
Oh, that's a great question. And we're always thinking about ways that we can warm up our houses around the holidays, especially on a budget. And one way we like to do that is by creating some of our own projects. So we love the mix of the handmade items with some of the store-bought goods. So today we brought along a really cute little planter box centerpiece we built out of a few pieces of wood And we filled it with some candles and some Christmas ornaments, and it's a beautiful, very warm piece that we can leave out all year. And another easy way that we like to bring warmth and coziness around the holidays is with texture. We bring texture into the home, and an easy way to do that is with a thick textured blanket. We like to throw them over couches, over chairs, and we can put them in baskets around the home. Peeking out, you know, it's something that's functional and cozy at the same time.
That sounds very cool. Well, some people like to do a theme when they're decorating. Have you seen any popular themes for this year or any unusual ones?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, we have been looking up and down the aisles here at home, and they have so many different themes. We've seen beach themes, Victorian, Western.
There's an upside-down Christmas tree, which is probably the quirkiest I've seen, and it's very interesting.
Oh, very fun.
Yeah.
Well, ladies, how can we make a maximum impact when we're decorating for the holidays without spending a lot of money?
Well, we have 8 kids between us, so we are always thinking budget-friendly. How can we make something beautiful on a budget at the same time? And one of our greatest pieces of advice around Christmas time is to really think evergreen. So to look past your traditional Christmas decor and kind of think about using items that could actually stay out all year. We have a great, like, lantern here that we filled with Christmas ornaments and balls, and it's perfect for Christmas time. And then right after Christmas, we can empty that and fill it with candles, even fill it with pumpkins around fall. So it's a piece that we're able to leave out all year long, in turn saving us a lot of money.
And really, less is more, too. If you're tight on budget, a smaller tree is such a great option. We've got this 3.5-foot Christmas tree right here. It's $40 at home right now, and we've actually placed some baskets underneath it upside down, so it's sitting on there giving the illusion of a 5-foot Christmas tree. And when you have a smaller tree to decorate, it costs a lot less money to decorate it.
Right, and we're able to use those baskets again later on. They're great for decor and storage. We also wrap the base of the tree in a table runner. Very unexpected, but it's something we'll be able to put on the dining room all year long.
That's very cool, and it's great to have things that you can use throughout the year and not just during the holidays. Well, ladies, where can we go for more information and find out more about the tips that you shared today?
Yeah, absolutely. You can definitely check out athome.com to find the nearest store near you, which will let you be able to see all the goodies we're using here today. And then you can go check out our website, shantytochic.com, and we're giving lots of tips and tricks.
Ashley and Whitney, thank you so much for being with us, and happy holidays.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. Thanks for having us.
We want to thank all of our great guests today, and thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show. And come back next Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern. We'll be having all new guests, great new topics, and we can't wait to share those with you. Wanted to wish a very happy Hanukkah to all of our friends who are celebrating Hanukkah this week. And I hope that all of you will have a wonderful, happy holiday season. Join us at momrn.com. And if you haven't checked out our Facebook page, we would love for you to like us there and connect with us there. Just go to Ask Mom RN Show on Facebook. And if you are on Twitter, we are at MomRN. On YouTube, just search for MomRN or Ask Mom RN Show. You'll find our videos there. And we would love to hear from you. If you have guest suggestions or topic ideas, or if you have a question that you would like answered by one of our experts, please connect with us. Let us know either on Facebook or go to momrn.com. You can find our email address there. We would love to hear from you. Again, happy holidays, everyone. We will be back with you next Monday.